Hi, I'm Mario Guerra, the two-time former mayor of the great city of Downey. And you're listening, you're watching Talking Downey with Mayor Mario. Hi, folks. I wanted to bring you a special episode today of Talking Downey of something very cool and unique that just happened to me that just kind of brought me back to being a little boy again recently. Many of you know that I wrote a book called Embracing Change, an Immigrant Saga. And this book was written, it was finished 10 years ago after I was off the council. So the last 10 years of my life are not reflective in there, but I wrote the book to memorialize some of the things that happened to me early in life. And the book is dead, especially coming here and embracing change, if you will. Coming from a communist country, coming as a refugee, and the life that we had here, and the specialness of what my parents did to get us here. But I wrote this book because I wanted my grandkids, first of all my kids, but I wanted my grandkids to have something permanent that they could see and they can some of the stories that I keep telling. I am the last living Guerra. All of my brothers passed away before age 60. My dad, my uncles, there is no living Guerra on the Guerra side of the family. My brothers all died in different ways, and they all died young. One at 29 from a plane crash, my brother Louie that I talk about. My brother Manny died from cancer in his 50s. My brother John at 39 died from a brain tumor. My other brother Manuel died from Parkinson's. And my dad died of a heart attack. He was a diabetic, a type 1 diabetic, with the old insulin, if you will. So my dad died in his late 50s when I was a young man. So I've always thought, and the joke in our family always was that I was never going to make it to age 60. And I did. So at my birthday for age 60, my wife and kids threw a big birthday party, and it was celebrated. Now I don't even think about it. You know, I just want to live every single day for the goodness of everyone and for enjoying my life. And I'm living my best life. So, but I did write this book. I'm not saying because I'm promoting the book, but it's kind of interesting how something that just happened tied in. So we came from, my family and I came from Cuba on the third freedom flight, Los Viajes de Libertad, on December 21st, 1965. December 21st, 1965. I was a little boy. I always tell people I had my first Wrigley gum on the plane. I was scared to death. They took us right from our house straight to the airport. We were all strip searched. I remember as a little boy being strip searched. We weren't allowed to bring anything. I think one suitcase with, like, you know, certain things in it on there, but it wasn't a whole bunch. My dad had very limited funds when he went in his pocket. And, of course, they didn't, you know, they gave everything away, our house, all our clothes. They gave it to our neighborhood, if you will. My house is now a school there with 800 students in it. This is the house that my dad had built for my mom. My grandmother lived on the first floor. We lived there. That's my bedroom. It had underground parking. So, and as a little kid, every time there was a hurricane, I loved it. The bottom would fill up with water and the whole neighborhood and come to our house. So anyways, it was totally different from a little kid's perspective. So we came straight from there. They took us to the airport where, like I said, I remember being strip searched and thinking, why is this? What are they looking for? But one of the things then, once we made the 90-mile trek over to Miami, we came with a lot of other Cubans after had come to, into the Freedom Tower. That's where we were processed. That's where things happen. And the first thing they give you is this yellow card, Cuban Refugee Emergency Center. There's my name. And on the back, Cuban Refugee Emergency Center, Biscayne Boulevard, the medical dispensary, keep this card, and so forth. So the one thing that was interesting on here, that the very first, and they list your immunization shots. Remember now people, you know, are having this discussion about, you know, vaccines and immunizations and so forth. It wasn't a choice back then. And I'm not saying it was wrong, but my first one was December 21st, 1965. That's the first stamp on there. And then all the other ones since that time. We only stayed in Miami for a couple of weeks, and then we came here to Huntington Park, California. There was 12 of us in a one-bedroom apartment and with the two grandmothers. And I see it's on Miles Avenue. It's a small, little, simple apartment. And I've taken all my kids to the outside to see this is where 12 of us lived. And we did what every other immigrant does, right? Everybody goes to work. So we were all there in that. I was a little kid. I was, you know, we were dirt poor. We ate black beans every night for substance. And once in a while, we had a can of Spam in there. But yet we were happy. We were together. Everybody went to work. My brothers, my dad, and my mom. I had a paper route that I would make $5 a month, and I would feel like I was contributing. But on December 21st of this year, by the way, it was very interesting. My dad was a surgeon in Cuba, and when he got here, of course, he didn't speak English and didn't didn't have all the medical tests and everything else. So he went to work as a janitor initially at California Hospital in downtown L.A., because he needed, like I said, like all immigrants, you need to pay and support your family. He was taking his exams and his tests and learning and so forth. One of the things I found in his night drawer when he passed was his operating room, the Association of Operating Room Technicians from January 1969. And here was the treasurer, and it was my dad's signature. He's approved by the National Advisory Board and so forth. I thought that was kind of neat. And then the other thing he had in a nightstand was his dues were paid up for Rotary in Cuba. He was active till December 1965. And I thought that was just kind of two things that he had in his nightstand drawer. So, okay, so where am I going with all this? So every December 21st, I make a post, social media post, about, and I show some of these photos of me coming in the Freedom Tower in the you know, Los Viajes de Libertad. And I give thanks to this great country, and December 21st is a special day always. Now, it's been quite a few years, and this year marked, you know, this is 2025. This year, December 21st, will mark, you know, 60 years of being in this country. So obviously, I've been here longer than that. It's a special day for me. So I post something. And this year I've also posted my immunization record here, along with some other pictures. So come and behold, in January, through my website, MarioAguerra.com, I'm not publicizing. I just said that naturally because if you're interested. But I'm not saying that I don't sell anything. I'm not selling anything. All the money from the book has been given away to profit for nonprofits on there to veterans associations and to the poor. So I'm not trying to make any money, but that's if you want to know more about me, that's where it is, MarioAguerra.com. I got an email through there and from somebody at the Freedom Tower. And asking me whether I'd be willing, they saw my post, where I'd be willing to talk to them. So I gave her a call the next day, and she was so excited. She was talking to everybody else in the office. They said anybody that still had their card wouldn't have been media savvy, would be too old to put it online. So her staff gave up on trying to find this online from somebody posting this. And I was literally that needle in the haystack, and she was so excited, and I just started laughing. I'm like, well, I'm here, and here it is, and yes, I do have it. So they set up for a couple weeks later if I would do a professional interview on Zoom, and then I still haven't sent them back to her, but if I would take a lot of these photos and scan them to the best quality, they want to use them there at the Freedom Tower Museum. It's opening up again this July. This is the curator for Miami-Dade County Museum and the university there. And you should see the photos. I'm going to put some of the photos of some of the things they're going to be doing. Brandon will put them up on this episode along with some of these other photos. But it's the grand reopening in July. It was funny because I laughed. She told me, she goes, a couple of days ago, I interviewed Arturo Sandoval. And last week I interviewed Gloria Estevan, and the week before there was Andy Garcia. And I said, well, this is Mario Guerra. I'm not in their league by any stretch of the imagination. Those are all famous Cubans that we love, and they do a great job representing our culture, if you will. She goes, no, you just, you know, I was the mayor of the first city out here, the first Cuban mayor of the city out here on the West Coast that represents the majority, or a lot of Cubans, if you, not the majority, a lot of Cubans. City of Downey has a lot of Cubans. It's always been a move-up community, and that's why we've had good leaders here and so forth. So I'm proud to be the first Cuban mayor, first refugee mayor here in the whole city, Cuban or non-Cuban. So anyway, so I want to tell you this story because this was kind of cool that this little thing made a difference on showing that off. I also want to tell you, so in looking at this, I keep all my little souvenirs in this Guerra cigar box, and that's a whole different story. But when I was writing the book, and after my mom had passed, I found in all her belongings, I found my old Cuban passport. I'm an American citizen. I have an American passport. I traveled the world on there. But this was my Cuban passport, if you will. I was a cute little guy. Okay, that's me there. But there's a couple of interesting things. We had been trying to get out of the country. My dad was pretty well off as a surgeon, and then also with the Guerra Cigar Company that my grandfather had started. He had some means. So we had been trying to get out of the country for quite a while. So one of the things that we have, it's here in my passport, okay, that we had a visa to go to Spain. El Consulado de España on November 21st, 1963. November 21st, 1963, they went and got permission and got the visa to go to Spain. So we were going to be leaving, going via through Spain. So what happened on November 22nd? President Kennedy was killed. And the very next day, and the whole world was in chaos, and obviously the sadness of all that and the turmoil. And of course, we didn't go. So the following year, in 1964, June 18, 1964, they got permission to go to Switzerland, the embassy of Suiza, that we were getting the visa to be able to go there, to Switzerland. And, of course, we ended up coming on the following year through Miami on the Freedom flights, if you will. But it's interesting to see that, and what an interesting souvenir. So when I went back to Cuba with my mom, the year 2000, and a lot of people, especially the people in Miami, didn't want me to go. You're going to go there. You're going to give money to Castro. You're going to do all these things. And I totally got that. I understand. But I wanted to go back with my mom because I was a little boy when I came. So I wanted the stories from my mom. I wanted her to show me the house. I wanted her to teach me where things were. And so if I wanted to see the cemeteries of with my grandfathers, both grandfathers in different parts of the country there. So we did. I went back against everybody's begging me not to go. And it's the greatest thing I did. My mom died a few years later, and I couldn't have replicated that trip. It was very special and emotional to be there that whole time. She stayed a little bit longer. I stayed about 10 days. So we went to my hometown, and then, of course, it was like a conquering hero. My dad was somebody that gave a lot to the community. There's a street named after him. But the one thing that I didn't expect, so my mom and I, we went to the old Guerra cigar factory, okay? My grandfather owned a cigar company called Guerra Cigars, and now it's a Cohiba Cigars, and it wasn't directly taken from that, but now it's partly a Cohiba factory there in my hometown in Ogolguin. So my mom went by to visit, and sure enough, two old tabaqueros in the early 90s are still working there. And they saw my mom through the outside. They came out, ay, Marita, Marita. And they were hugging and crying. And it was a very emotional thing because we'd left, 40 years earlier. But evidently my mom, so when my mom was a reader to all these men. So cigar makers, as you know, they sit there and they hand roll the cigar. There's got to be a certain sense of humidity in there because of all the cigar wrappings and so forth. So they would all sit there. It was before radios, if you will. So my mom would sit up in the front and she would read a book. She was known as a reader, just to keep them entertained. So she did this to help my grandfather's factory and my mom, my dad's, and so forth. So she was well known on there to these tabaqueros. But these two tabaqueros especially were still alive. It was just unbelievable. One of them went home and brought back this cigar box, okay? And this cigar box is nothing. It's like you and I have a little cigar box in the garage with little trinkets and so forth. That's what this cigar maker, Raul, was using for his at his house. So he brought it back. It was already, see, there's just tape on it. He had tried to tape it and so forth. So what makes it special? Well, it's Guerra Cigars, okay? Handmade since 1910, hecho en Cuba since 1910, patented. It says here, patented in 1910, calidad de this 1910, quality since 1910. The one thing that's really special, there's this picture of this little boy there, okay? That's my dad's picture as a little boy. It's amazing that we have that, and it's amazing that to be able to see that. I had it enlarged for my dad on there, but the signature below that is my grandfather's signature. So this Guerra cigar box on there has a lot of meaning to me. I keep it here in my office every day to remind me of how special this was. So let me fast forward to the airport because, it was interesting. So when I went back, and I, like I said, I came back by myself. I left my mom there. She was safe with a couple of family friends, if you will. And I took $4,000 in cash, okay? All in American money, of course. And when you're there, you give it away. You buy things for other people. I bought a baseball glove from somebody overpaid for a little boy. You give the money away. Mostly was for food. They were hungry. They were looking for food. They needed things like that. Remember, they don't have toilet paper. Light bulbs were in short demand. All kinds of things that they were needing. And it still continues today. It's a communist country. So, and two of our friends, I call them cousins, but they're not really related. They were doctors. And the one thing he asked me to bring was Preparation H and aspirin. We were allowed to bring one suitcase for 40 pounds. And I stocked it up with Preparation H and aspirin and all kinds of lightweight clothes, and I only had two pairs of tennis shoes. So I took $4,000 in cash, and I gave it all away. On the way back, I thought, okay, I better keep some cash. So I kept five $20 bills, $100 of the $4,000. And I figured once I got from, Holguín is on the other side of the country, once I got to Havana, and then from Havana to the U.S., to Miami before I came back to California, I figured I'd have a Visa and a MasterCard when I got to Miami. So I wouldn't have needed cash, if you will, even back then. So I had this five $20 bills. So, and I gave all my clothes away. Only thing I had was a baggie of dirt from my hometown, a baggie of dirt from the back of my house on there. And that was kind of it. A couple other souvenirs that had no monetary value. They were just things from Cuba that I wanted to have as a remembrance. Then I had the box, right? And I had a T-shirt that I wrapped around there to try to keep it safe. So I go on the Cuban checkpoint, okay? And there was a lady with a machine gun there, okay? Inspecting one machine gun and then the other lady in front of her, again, Cuban side, inspecting my suitcase. So she's going through and then she goes, ¿Y esto lo que? And what is this? And I start bragging, mira, señora, mira, ese mi padre, ese de mi abuelo, la compañera fabrica, la fabrica, fabriquera, guerra, tabaquería guerra, this is it, and that's my grandfather, that's great, it doesn't exist anymore, there's now another cigar place there, but, so I go on, tell her, so I'm proud as can be, I just thought this was the greatest thing. She looks at it, and she goes, esto es parte de la revolución, this is part of the revolution. I go, no, señora, no. Mira, ese mi padre, esto me lo dio un viejito tabaquero, an elderly, a cigar maker, went home and got it. He had it at his house. And she goes, esto es parte de la revolución. And she's getting mad. And this is part of the revolution. And now I'm starting to get worried. I'm like, I can't leave this here. She's going to throw it away. It has no value to anybody but me. And then I go into the begging mode. Por favor, señora, esto valor para mí, para mi familia. Quiero enseñárselo a mis hijos. This is value to me and my family. I want to show this to my kids. They're please. I go into the begging mode, and I'm thinking, you know, I don't want to get arrested, but I can't leave this here. So finally, we go back. Por favor, señora, por favor. And I go into a very serious, humble, phase on there. So she finally says, she gives me back the box and gives me my American passport. Of course, I was flying an American passport. She goes, ponlo en el pasaporte, ponlo en el pasaporte. And she gives me both these things, and I have my American passport in the cigar box. Ponlo en el pasaporte. And I'm thinking, what does that mean? And then a few seconds later, it hit me. Oh, I get it. She wants money. Because I literally went like this. What? So what's the going rate to help get this box? I don't know. So I turned around. Remember, I had five $20 bills. I turned around, and I took two $20 bills, and I put it into my American passport. And then cautiously, I handed it to her. I'm thinking I'm going to get arrested and be confiscated there in Cuba for the rest of my life as a political prisoner or something. Because they do call you gusano. They call you a worm because you left. Okay, so we're worms to start with. So I give this to her very patiently and scared. And then she goes like this, and she looks right in the eye, takes the money out, puts it in her pocket, gives me back my American passport. She said, tenga muy viaje, have a good flight. So that was a relief. That was a big relief. But so that's how I have this here. And I keep it in my office. I keep it right behind me because every day I get an opportunity to remind myself, yes, I am so proud to be an American citizen my whole life. But you know, I have, like all of us, no matter if you're Italian, Irish, Mexican, we all have roots in different cultures, if you will. So I wanted to always celebrate my culture and my roots and make sure my family understands that. So that's part of who I am. And this is just, I wanted to share that story in a couple of these stories. So I have some great photos that I will be sharing. We had a farm in Cuba. There's me with a little car that we had there. That's actually on the front. That photo is on the front of my book. So, like I said, we were comfortable enough until the revolution. And then, of course, things changed. And my dad and my mom, for the freedom, knew that we had to get out of the country. And we wanted to make our home here. When we first got here, obviously, everything was strange. I felt bad for my parents. But for me, you know, I didn't know the language. I wet my pants the first day of school. I went to Miles Avenue Elementary, and then I went to Gage Junior High School, and then I went to Huntington Park High School. So my first day, I'm out on the recess at the yard. I wet my pants. I didn't know a word of English. So looking back, in my household, we weren't allowed to speak Spanish. My mom and dad wanted us to, immerse ourselves in the language and in the culture on there. So we weren't allowed to do that, which is good in a way. You hear me, I have a funny voice, but that's a physical part. But I don't have an accent because I grew up with that. When I was back in Cuba and my two, cousins, if you will, asked me, do you think in Spanish or you think in English? And I had to think a minute. And I'm like, I think in English. That's how I was raised. So I could read Spanish, word for word. I can talk, yo puedo comunicar con usted, pero my vocabulary, las palabras no me salen que quiero hablar en español. My Spanish is not good. At church, I preach several masses a month, and Father Tony has asked me to do the Spanish masses, and I don't feel comfortable because the vocabulary doesn't come from the heart. And it doesn't come as natural. So that's one of the things I wish my kids, we have five kids, had learned more of on there. And we try to. And I'm hoping my grandkids somehow get some of the language back. Because in Southern California, especially, it's great to know Spanish. It's great to know more than one language anyway. So, okay, I just wanted to give you a little bit of the history of what's going on. From the Freedom Tower, from my immunization card, okay, and some of the photos that they asked for back there. I have these photos of my mom and dad. My dad was president of one of the first clubs outside the United States, Rotary Clubs, 1949. And here he's on the radio giving certain awards. And here's my mom, my dad, and my mom on their club, 1949, Olguineros. This is my dad pinning. This is actually the doctor that he became friends and actually taught my dad so much of it, and he's the one that delivered me. So, and then, of course, charity work was all a big part of Rosary. This is my mom helping an orphanage there. So my parents obviously had a big influence in my life. They instilled charity in my life at an early age, but they also did prepared. They were able to get these photos out of the country. They were able, my mom translated and had notarized all my dad's medical records and the things he had graduated and so forth, so it was easier for him to get a job here, or at least to start, that he wasn't starting from scratch. My birth certificate, my baptismal register, and all those things, or my baptismal records. So my mom was way ahead of her time, and my mom and dad said we left everything behind, that beautiful house, everything they did to come here to make a new life with freedoms, with all the things that this great country represents. And I couldn't be prouder of that. I love my culture. I'm proud to be Cuban by birth, but I'm American by heart and design. You heard that old story on there. So I hope this gives you a little bit of a history, if you will, on how I got here. Most importantly, you know, people laugh at me sometimes. I make a lot of posts, but making this one actually changed it. They invited me back to the Freedom Tower in July with the grand opening. My interview will be there. Some of these photos will be there. And the Freedom Tower is kind of like the Ellis Island of New York, okay? So they want to make sure that they honor it properly here. And so many Cubans that went through that and the emotional state that we were all in. So I hope this gives you a little bit of background. I did this show more for my kids. So if I bored you during this, I'm so sorry. But I wanted my family to know some of the things that just happened. And I also wanted to memorialize that story. So anyways, thank you so much. If you'd like to hear other things you'd like to hear, please give me a call. 562-706-4114. 562-706-4114. Send me an email or look me up on the website. But I hope this was at least enlightening. And if it didn't enlighten you, kids, I hope this helped you to pass that story on to my grandkids. So God bless you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching Talking Downey with Mayor Mario.